Tune in Saturday, February 14th, for our membership drive, Bluegrass Marathon. From 9 to 5, we'll have bluegrass music and live performances by New Blue, The New 5 Cents, Holler Bodies, Mountain Honey, The Puddle Town Ramblers, and String Style, all playing live in studio. That's Saturday, February 14th, from 9 to 5, 8 hours of bluegrass music here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hello and welcome to a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And if you, the listener, have spent any time at all browsing the world of comics, my guest today needs little introduction. Scott McCloud is a lecturer, comics innovator, and author of Understanding Comics, Reinventing Comics, Making Comics, and the epic new graphic novel, The Sculptor. Scott, welcome back to Words and Pictures.
Thanks, Conch. Glad to be here.
So, Scott, after doing a bunch of books about the theory of comics, and these are books that have become part of the curriculum at art schools for over 20 years now, that was, Understanding Comics came out in the early 90s, if I recall.
That's right, yeah, 93, about 6 months before the first graphical web browser.
Oh, wow.
It might have been, you know, just prehistory for all that matters now. Yeah, lots happened in those years.
Well, after 20 years of these various books about comics theory, and very well received, all of them, you have come out with just an absolute doorstop of a book here. And it's at the same time one that's incredibly hard to put down. It's an arm buster. It's called The Sculptor. And this is a graphic novel. May I go out on a limb here? May I ask you if you are a Rod Serling fan at all?
Oh, well, I was brought up on the Twilight Zone like everybody else. I haven't gone back and dived into it, but it's probably shaped my whole idea of story structure, absolutely. Twilight Zone was one of those formative shows early on, like Star Trek or The Prisoner, you know, things from when I was pretty young that definitely shaped it. Also, Rod Serling, oddly enough, went to my college. He's a Syracuse guy.
No kidding.
I'm pretty sure he went to Syracuse.
Well, The Sculptor has as its protagonist an artist who is not terribly likable, which I like. I'm a fan of some of the British dramas, the British films that don't feel the need to have a protagonist that you can necessarily relate to.
Yeah. Well, actually, he was even more of a dick in the early versions. When I was working on the rough version of this story, I was counseled that nobody was going to want to spend 500 pages with this guy. And, you know, it's important. You can be even a psychopath, a sociopath like Macbeth. But if you just give readers kind of a window into your psyche, if you give them the opportunity to at least experience what you are like from the inside, I think they have an easier time of dealing with it. And that was the case with David also. I needed to have some kind of in, some kind of passageway for the readers into his head in order to understand the source of his bitterness, the source of his anguish, such that we could maybe go along for the ride with him.
Well, right. He's a troubled character. He's seen a lot of death. And in both senses of the word, I'm not giving too much away, but there's a lot of twists and turns and a lot of really sly references to literature and movies and pop culture. Of course, there's a Seventh Seal reference that works on a couple of different levels.
You don't even need to see Seventh Seal. You just need to see Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey to know that death likes playing games. But chess in particular, you know, I couldn't really resist that. The idea of death playing chess, actually, I think may even predate Ingmar Bergman's famous film. I think that might have been showing up in paintings in, many centuries ago. Somehow that idea that you're playing a game with death, mm-hmm. and that idea that maybe somehow you can win. Well, it is a game of chance, of course, and right. He always wins in the end.
Well, you put your own twist on it by having Death tell him that it doesn't matter whether he loses or wins at chess. But, you know, the twists keep right. on coming and going.
Well, that is it, you know, and that's partially that notion that there's some kind of loophole lingers when there's a game. But in the end, it is really just a game. David is visited by, you know, this character of his granduncle Harry, who's the embodiment of Death. But the only reason he plays chess at all is because granduncle Harry played chess. Death doesn't play chess. Death is just a, you know, an idea, a force, something out there in the universe.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm joined in the studio today by Scott McLeod, comics historian and author of the epic new graphic novel, The Sculptor. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk more with Scott. But first, my friends Will and Lynn would like to tell you how you can become a member of KBOO and get a fascinating new graphic novel delivered to your door.
That's right. Thank you very much, Conch. This is a great interview. There's all sorts of references from Macbeth to The Twilight Zone to comic books, just great original comic books. And this Sculptor
How can people get this book?
Well, I've heard it costs $75.
That's
well, it doesn't
right.
cost $75. It's a $75 donation to KBOO to keep us going, and you get this awesome graphic novel.
Which is just a pennies per page, an incredible deal. This is a tome of a book. It is great. Neil Gaiman said, Scott McLeod's The Sculptor is the best graphic novel I've read in years.
Whoa,
it's about
praise.
Art and love and why we keep on trying. It will break your heart, but it won't break your budget. For $75, that's $6.25 a month, you too can have this. And we only have one copy, so Wait. You need to be doing some calling in for that. We have one copy of
so
this amazing, it's unique, of this amazing graphic novel by Scott McLeod. It is unusual, just like Words and Pictures. Sometimes we say, a lot of times we say that you can't hear that anywhere else. You really can't. There are no, I don't know of any other shows about interviewing comics artists at this particular time that is completely what the show is about. Words and Pictures. Yes, that's it. So if you call 877-500-5266 right now, you beat the competition, can get this book.
Yeah, I think you should grab the phone right now because, I mean, how many other radio shows do you get references to Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey? I mean, that right there is terrific. And
paired with chess, yes.
And Ingmar Bergman
in the same
breath.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only $75 to keep this wonderful radio station on the air. Free speech does cost money. And you out there in the KBOO community can pick up your phone, make it happen. We have volunteers standing by. You can get this book, The Sculptor. We still have the book from the previous interview available. Not many, of course. We don't want to inundate you with stuff. We want you to get the very best, and that's what KBOO offers. So please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266.
Also, you can get How the World Was the graphic novel How the World Was by Emmanuel Joubert and Alan Cope for a $60 minimum pledge. That is $5 a month. That is an easy one too. But the first thing you've got to do, very affordable, the thing you've got to do is you've got to go to your phone and punch in 877-500-5266. Put us on your contacts because then next membership drive, you'll just remember. I think it's a good idea. Or kboo.fm and click on donate now. Any of those things are fine. We don't care how you donate. What we care about is that you contribute to this. It's a community radio station. You're the community. You're listening. If you're new to town, it's a great way to try to get settled. You can come in and volunteer and meet some of your like-minded, crazy, wacky people, community radio people, as someone said who met me at the WWOZ, the New Orleans community radio station. You're crazy community radio people, and we are. Join us, 877-500-5266, and now back to Conscious Interview.
Thank you both, and welcome back, everyone. The show is Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Conser, and today we're joined in the studio by Scott McLeod, the author of Understanding Comics, Reinventing Comics, and Making Comics, as well as the epic new graphic novel, The Sculptor. So we mentioned that David is a little difficult and takes a little while for people to warm to him. And I like how you contrast him, though, early on with another artist who's completely without merit. One of these new Jeff Koons style characters who just comes up with a concept and lets the peons in the fabrication factories actually try to bring it to life.
Well, you know, it's funny. The character of Finn Tanaka, who you're talking about, this kind of rival artist, who happens to be dating David's friend Ollie, he's in many ways really just the anti-David. All I did was I just went down the list. And if you look at it, almost every important component of David's character, Finn is simply the opposite. Finn is lazy, where David is hardworking. Finn has a good, well-honed sense of irony, where David is overly earnest and impervious to irony.
He says he has an irony deficiency.
Right, yeah, he has an irony deficiency, which is actually a line I got from one of Leonard Bernstein's children. They said that they thought their dad had an irony deficiency that always stuck with me, because I realized it was true of me to some degree, and it was something that I had to try to understand and grapple with. But yeah, so he's simply a foil. I have to say, you know, the reference to Jeff Koons, there's a whole discussion about Koons in this book.
Yes, later on in the book.
Yeah.
And you share my distaste because, like David, I'm fascinated by the form that artwork takes. You know, there's so much virtual artwork that takes place on a graphics tablet nowadays. And to me, part of the thrill of making art is to go up against the limitations of the media. You know, you've got paint, you've got wood, you've got granite, you've got all these things that tell you what they're going to allow you to make. And that's a fascination that more theoretical artists like Koons, they take a miss on that completely.
Well, this is funny, though, because you may be mistaking the philosophy of my protagonist for my own. Uh-huh. I'm actually very agnostic on Koons. I think that you know, by presenting that notion that David feels like he's just creating kitsch, he doesn't like that Koons is worshipped the way he is. David is showing revulsion at the idea that he lives in a random, uncaring universe where basically Koons is just a creation of the marketplace. And, you know, I thought that was that ultimately that's what the debate is about. David believes on some deep, deep fundamental level that there's some kind of judge, there's some kind of arbiter, there's some art god hovering over us all that's just clucking their tongue and shaking their head at Jeff Koons. And as it comes out in the discussion, really, you know, from the point of view of his friend Ollie, it's just he is what people say he is. Just a creature of society. You plunk this work down and this personality down in a particular cultural context, in a particular economic context, and it catches or it doesn't, but it's like the weather patterns, you know?
And the book takes up that larger discussion of, you know, what used to be the art community and is now more and more the art market. So there are artists that are now making art that's just a commentary on the art market. And
although I think in some ways that's been true for a century or so. In fact, some of the more significant artists, I think, maybe understood that market as part of their daily game. Certainly Warhol did, but I think maybe going back even to Duchamp, there was this understanding that the human beings, including the human beings holding the money, were your material. You know, you were partially manipulating those. But throughout this book, you'll see those moments where essentially you're reminded that there's no judge. There is no art god. This is about losing your religion by degrees. You know, these are secular people I'm writing about for the most part. But to some degree, the belief in the afterlife of being remembered and the belief that there's some kind of external validating force that's going to certify what you do as worthy or not, this is a kind of religion too. And it's something that my character gradually has to let go of.
Well, the whole book is embracing supernaturalism. You've got this character who suddenly has this impossible gift, this gift that he can simply create sculptures. He can manipulate materials with his mind and his bare hands. What would you call this? Magical realism? Fantasy? What's the term?
Yeah, I'm not sure it quite qualifies as magical realism. And I hope it doesn't qualify as a serious superhero comic, because there's nothing more dull and awful than a serious superhero
comic.
Well,
you take pains to restrict the abilities that the character has. He's told by Death that he can't use his gifts to fight crime, only to make art. So the art moves from the private to the public as David's gift for making sculptures out of anything progresses.
Yeah, and this is really that desperate cry for attention, you know, because that's what is he really trying to do throughout this, but demand the attention of the world as a way of setting down an anchor in the world so he doesn't get washed away by time. This is his terror. And, you know, it's important to understand that this is not a story about somebody who wants to be remembered. This is a story about somebody who is terrified of being forgotten. And there's a slight difference there. You know, this is an animal need. He's on the deck of the Titanic, and the whole world is just tilting and tilting and tilting, and he's grabbing onto anything he can, anything that's permanent, anything that might last. He's trying to set down anchors. And so this is one way to do it, is to somehow be out in the world in such a way that you're demanding to be remembered. But then as he does so, he's also in some ways abandoning the idea of the worth of what he's doing as art. It becomes just a cry for attention in and of itself. And even he realizes on some level that there isn't necessarily a strong artistic drive behind it. It's more just that animal need to be seen.
And in the best tradition of literature, of course, his wishes turn back and bite him in the behind.
They
constantly
do, maybe in a more gentle way than the traditional Faustian bargain. He really comes to see the hollowness of some of what he wanted and the worth of its alternative, which is living in the moment and embracing the time he has rather than being so obsessed with this aesthetic afterlife, you know, that he's chasing. But that becomes a kind of sweet surrender, I think, in the end. And there's a kind of calm that settles over him. He's forced to live a life's worth in 200 days. You know, what we're seeing is we're seeing the maturing of somebody that mimics a little what happens over the course of maybe 40, 50 years of an artistic career, where you gradually have that sense of acceptance of the temporary quality of what you do. You know, where you arrive, you know, you start out as the brash young artist and you wind up having more admiration for somebody like Smithson, you know, who would create these land art installations that would then be washed away by the sea, you know.
Andy Goldsworthy is another example of that.
Yeah, there are many. I go all the way going back to, you know, the flaw in the mandalas, where you would like wipe away all that you've done just to say this will always be this will always be flawed. That's the kind of thing that you gradually gain an appreciation for as an older man. But he stays a young man. He only has 200 days, but he gets to experience some of that growth on an accelerated basis.
Well, he's getting feedback from his material because he's able to work on it so much faster than he normally would.
Right, and that's both a blessing and a curse, because just as you say, a lot of art is struggling against the limitations of the material. Without the limitations, he's coming up against the wall of the limitations of his own imagination, is the limitations of his own understanding of what he wants.
The book touches, as we said, on issues of high art and low art, and I'm making air quotes right now. The same thing's part and parcel of the books that you wrote on the theory of comics, understanding comics, reinventing comics, making comics, that comics have always been part of the art scene. The last time you were here, many years ago, we talked about such celebrated artworks as the Bayeux Tapestry, as Ethiopian iconography, as Trajan's Column.
And
how those can easily be identified as early versions of comics. This synthesis of image and text that's supposed to be read in a narrative fashion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, especially that aspect of sequence that I tend to focus on especially. But basically what I'm saying is not so much that comics needs to be in some way validated by the association, because I don't necessarily buy that idea, but more that we should see this as a natural invention of human thought that's occurred again and again and again in cultural isolation. That idea of continuity, right? You can go to the European broadsheets that people like Kunzel have talked about, And you can clearly see that those are comics. By the time you get to 1500, really, there's almost nothing we associate with modern comics that's not fully in place, right down to word balloons, captions, panel borders, all of it's there from the 1500s onward. And that stuff was seen probably by Hogarth. Hogarth's stuff was seen by Topfer. Topfer's stuff was seen by the British Humor magazines. The British Humor magazines were seen by America. So you have this connectedness, right? We have this continuity. But the pre-Columbian picture manuscripts, those codices, like the Codex Natal, those things weren't being influenced by Europe. Europe wasn't being influenced by them, but they were still discovering that same art of telling stories with pictures. Just like mankind, or humankind, we should say, if grown up in isolation and in isolated communities around the world with no contact at all with each other, would still discover language. They would still discover spoken language naturally over time.
The book is The Sculptor. The author is Scott McLeod. You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're going to come back and talk to Scott some more in a couple of minutes. But first, my friends out in Membership Central want to tell you how you can become a member of KBOO and get a copy of The Sculptor delivered to your door.
That's right. Thank you, Conch. And this sounds like a great book. I really wish I could read it. It's an incredibly articulate conversation between these men, both of them artists themselves. And we do have that book. It's only $75, but you're not paying $75 for the graphic novel. You are donating $75 to keep KBOO on the air, and you are getting this terrific book.
As a gift.
As a gift, exactly. We want to give back to you because that's what community is all about. And you do that by dialing 877-500-5266.
That's only one copy left?
One copy left. Wow, people better hurry. 877-500-5266. You can also donate online, of course. Excuse me, at kboo.fm.
And we've also got How the World Was by Emmanuel Joubert and Alan Cope. I hope I'm saying that correctly, which is another great graphic novel for a $60 minimum donation. So you can go 60, you can do 75. Both of these are monthly, can be split up by month because we really love the monthly giving. We love EFTs because lets us know, sort of gives us an idea monthly about money. It's very secure and super convenient to do that. And for every $1,000 a month that we can increase our membership donations, we're able to take one day off the membership drive every year, and everybody kind of wants that. But right now, you can get this amazing graphic novel, which has been lauded and applauded all over the place. It's huge, dollar per dollar. What a deal for $75 for a minimum donation for that, $6.25 a month. You can't beat it. But to do that, you got to call 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO, or go online to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
That's right. That's right. It's so important to do this. It's really, really important. And you can get that done today by dialing 877-500-5266. And as Lynn pointed out, this book, The Sculptor, has been endorsed by Neil Gaiman, a genuine giant of modern popular literature and comic books. I remember his comic books coming out in the 80s. I know many people out there listening right now remember Neil Gaiman. And Neil Gaiman said, this is worth getting. And you can get it from us at KBOO. You can walk in the front door, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're very easy to find. You can become a volunteer, or you can just drop off some money to keep this great radio station going. But it's so important you do this. It's so important you become an active member of your community.
And do it now.
Yep, do it now.
Now is the time to do this.
When is it?
Right now.
I thought so.
This very, very, very minute. You're listening. You like it. You know you do. 877-500-5266 to support KBOO, your community radio station. All of us donate. It's not the amount that you donate, unless you want to, of course, get a book, and then there, it does come with a qualification. But other than that, what we want is for you to get on the phone and do it now. 877-500-5266. Support your community. This is what we're about. Like we've been saying all morning, if you are new to Portland, and so many people are, this is a great way to get connected to the community, because you might miss community. That you've been having community. Very few places in the country have community radio stations anymore. We have been going strong for 47 years. We want to do at least another 47 more. there is value in terrestrial radio, and there's value in listening to us online, because we've gotten donations this morning from like Toronto, and occasionally there's one from Paris, France. But right now, where I don't care where you are or who you are, time you are listening, so it's time to donate. 877-500-5266 to support KBOO. A will?
That's absolutely right. It's incredibly important, and it's part. You're part of the community, whether you moved to this town yesterday or whether you were born and raised here. You're part of the KBOO community. You're part of the Portland community, and you make your community work by donating or pledging the money you feel you can afford, and that keeps this radio station on the air. And it is such a valuable resource for such an awesome city that is Portland, Oregon. So pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. We have many other gifts. We have the awesome, super cool militant hoodie at $20 a month. You can get that. And all these terrific graphic novels, something I'm very fond of. And then we have the book about the geology of Oregon. There's so much going on at KBOO Radio Station.
Our and you're a fan. Our volunteers are ready. They are ready, willing, and able to help you right now. 877-500-5266.
That's right. Make those phones ring.
Ring-a-ding-ding. 877-500-5266. Or kboo.fm. We're going to get back really soon to SW Concher's interview with Scott McCloud and his amazing, amazing graphic novel, The Sculptor. Back to it now.
Thank you both again. Welcome back, everyone. The show is Words and Pictures. I'm SW Concher. We're joined here by Scott McCloud. His new epic graphic novel is The Sculptor. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you're interested in telling the listeners about?
Well, I guess just in regards to The Sculptor, one thing that I've always tried to get across is that even though I'm always talking about, you know, the various big ideas and, you know, important sweeping generalized concepts that the book sometimes deals with, the first thing I wanted to accomplish with this book was to create an absorbing story, a page turner, because I happen to love page turners. I love a story that sucks you in and doesn't let you go, and where you spend a lot of time just really just wanting to know what happens next. And that's something I tried very hard to do here. It's not about the theories, it's not about panel transitions or, you know, notions of composition and how it affects the reading experience. That stuff's all behind the scenes. If I've done my job right, should open it up, fall into the world in a few pages, and not come out blinking in the sunlight until you're all the way to the end. That's what I was shooting for.
Well, it is a page turner. At the same time, though, having read Understanding Comics,
I know you can't help it. Right?
I can't help but see so much of the theory.
Yeah, but you knew you had an interview to prepare for.
There's that, but the pace is very deliberate.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
It's not just one action piece after another. You know,
no, not at all.
There's a lot of atmosphere in here, and so the twists reveal themselves very organically.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, again, the book is The Sculptor. It's an epic graphic novel. The author is Scott McCloud. And Scott, once again, it's fantastic to have you in the studio. I hope you'll come back again soon.
I hope so, Conch. Thanks very much.
Scott McCloud is a comics historian and theorist whose books include Understanding Comics, Reinventing Comics, and Making Comics. Scott, so we've run out of time, but if you can stick around and chat for a few more minutes, we'd love to find out more about some of your other innovations, including the 24-hour comic jam and the surrealist game of Five-Card Nancy. How does that sound?
Sounds great, Conch.
Great. We'll put that extra audio up on the KBOO website a little later today for our listeners to access. The Words and Pictures archive page can be found at kboo.fm/words and pictures. I'm your host, SW Concher. Thanks to everyone who's called in during Words and Pictures today and started or renewed their membership with KBOO. Once again, you can still become a member and get a fabulous new graphic novel sent to your home. Just call one of the phone volunteers right now. The toll-free number is 877-500-KBOO. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 12th, 2015. Yesterday, three people were killed in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, in what could be a hate crime against Muslims. Dia Shadi Barakat, age 23, his wife, Yusor Muhammad, age 21, and her sister, Razan Muhammad Abu Salah, age 19, were murdered by the couple's upstairs neighbor, Craig Hicks. Hicks's wife says the killings came from a dispute over a parking space. The victims' families, however, say that the killings were based in his prejudice against Muslims. Local authorities are investigating both motives. Shipping companies stopped cargo unloading today at West Coast ports as part of an ongoing dispute with workers. The companies allege that workers have instituted a slowdown. Work today would have required overtime pay in honor of Lincoln's birthday. The companies have also canceled unloading on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, President's Day, which would also require overtime pay. The Indian government has asked the United States to investigate an assault on an Indian man by police in Alabama. Sir Shabi Patel was walking one morning while visiting his son when he was stopped by the police, who say that they received calls about a man looking into garages. Patel, whose son says that he doesn't speak English, reportedly gave the officers his phone number and pointed to his son's house before an officer threw him to the ground. The attack has left Patel paralyzed. Yesterday, workers and unions asked Port of Portland to institute new minimum wage, equipment, and safety standards. A report released by the union SEIU Local 49 said that workers at PDX, like baggage handlers and cabin cleaners, struggled with, quote, persistent poverty. The Port of Portland Commission is currently working on a new initiative that it says will provide policy changes to improve workers' conditions. Governor John Kitzhaber has said that he will not resign. Kitzhaber has been under scrutiny since last fall, when it was revealed that he used his position to secure government contracts for businesses affiliated with his fiancée, Sylvia Hayes. The Oregonian's editorial board called for his resignation in a column last week. Speculation about his resignation was fueled in part by Secretary of State Kate Brown's early return to Oregon from a trip. Brown would replace him if he resigned. The Oregon Attorney General's office is currently investigating Kitzhaber and Hayes on criminal charges. And that's the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 12th, 2015. Tune in every weekday at 5 for more local, national, and international news produced by our volunteer news team here at KBOO Community Radio. For KBOO News, I'm James Helmsworth.
Shocks of Sheba has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery. Committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs, Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver.